Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Congratulations, old guy. Ben's brother Phil slapped him on the back. You're the proud dad of a 16-year-old.
Yeah, Ben looked rueful. I can hear the car keys jingling in his hands already.
I know, Phil nodded. When they start driving, we stop sleeping.
It's not even that, Ben grimaced. It's the car. Brad expects to get a car.
A car? Phil's eyes bulged. He's only 16. How can he afford that?
It's not him. Ben shot Phil a pained look. It's me. He expects me to buy him one. All his friends' parents did.
What? Phil nearly exploded. You don't look like a bank to me. Can't you just tell him no?
I wish it were that easy, sighed Ben.
From a parent's perspective, what can we do to keep our youngsters from being materialistic kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been researching and writing about these kinds of issues over a number of years. Dr. Tim Kasser is an associate professor of psychology at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. He has authored over 55 scientific articles and book chapters on materialism, values, goals, and quality of life. His first book, The High Price of Materialism, was published by MIT Press in 2002. His second, co-edited with Alan D. Kanner, Psychology and Consumer Culture, was released by the American Psychological Association in 2004. Dr. Kasser also works with activist groups that try to protect children from commercialization and that encourage a more inwardly rich lifestyle. He lives with his wife, two sons, and assorted animals in the western Illinois countryside. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Professor Kasser.
Thanks. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
When we talk about kids these days being materialistic, in general, is it true? Are they more focused on consumer goods than previous generations? And
well, it certainly seems to be that the kids today are more materialistic and focused on money and consumption and issues like that. One really interesting piece of evidence about that, since the mid-1960s, the University of California, Los Angeles has been conducting research of entering freshmen every year and asking them what's important in life. And so they've done this every year for the last 40-some years. And one of the questions that they ask is, how important is it to you to be financially well off, okay, to have a lot of money? And in 1966, about 42% of freshmen said, yeah, it's very important or it's essential to be financially well off. In 1980, it was 62%, and in 2006, it was about 75%. So we can see that there's been an enormous increase over the last 40-some years in terms of how much kids are saying, yes, it's really important that I make a lot of money. Another recent study conducted by the Pew Foundation sampled a bunch of 18 to 25-year-olds, and it asked what did they think was most important to their generation. And 80% of the kids said that the first or second most important thing to kids in my generation is getting rich. So there's something obviously going on here, which is making kids be more materialistic and care a lot more about money.
Well, let's be devil's advocates for a minute. What's wrong with wanting the latest, greatest, most of consumer goods? Isn't that what inspires ambition?
Well, I'm not convinced that it inspires ambition. I think there's lots of things that inspire wanting to make the world a better place or wanting to figure out how to build a better mousetrap or whatever. Sometimes it's money, and capitalism tells us it's money. But there are other things that motivate people. Like, look at Louis Pasteur. I don't think he was after the money in terms of figuring out how to heal people. So, you know, there's a variety of different problems that tend to be associated with materialism, and I tend to divide them into three main categories of problems. There are the personal problems, there's the social problems, and there's the environmental problems. And so what we find in our research is that, first off, the more people take on these materialistic messages, the more they believe that it's really important to have a lot of money and to have a lot of possessions, they actually report lower personal well-being. So they report being less happy, they report more problems with depression, anxiety, more kind of physical symptom problems like headaches and stomach aches, more alcohol use, more smoking, et cetera, et cetera. And there's been a variety of different studies which have shown this. Some of the studies are reviewed in my book, The High Price of Materialism. But since that book came out, there have been three studies which have looked directly at materialism in kids, middle schoolers and high schoolers. And it's tended to find the same thing again, that kids, even when they're only 10 or 12 years old, the more that they take on those messages that say, who I am depends on what I own or how much money I have, the less happy they are. So that's one of the big problems associated with being materialistic. Another problem that our research has been looking at has to do with social problems. I tend to think of this as like a seesaw. When you have people's values, you can't value everything at the same time, right? If you value one thing, to some extent, it's a zero-sum game, because if you're caring a lot about this one thing, it means you're caring less about something else. And what we find is that the materialistic values, the values for caring a lot about money, actually tend to oppose pro-social values. It's kind of like a seesaw or a teeter-totter. So as one goes up, the other one tends to go down. As the other one goes up, the other one tends to go down. And so what we found is that, and other people have found this as well, is that the more kids and adults care about money, the less they tend to care about things like helping the world be a better place, volunteering, contributing to the community. And the research shows, not surprisingly then, that materialistic kids are less empathic, they try less to understand how other people are feeling, they're more competitive and less cooperative when they play with their friends, they have worse interpersonal relationships with their friends, etc. So there seems to be this opposition between materialism and helping the world be a better place and having good relationships. And I think that's really scary for society, right? You know, it's very scary to think that what's happening in our economy is leading to people caring less about other people. The third problem that I mentioned has to do with ecological problems, and we've looked at this as well, where right now everybody's very aware of issues around global warming, but really global warming is only one part of the problem. We have habitat loss, we have pollution issues, and a great deal of that is brought on by consumption. You know, why do we have global warming? Well, it's because everybody wants a car and they drive it, and because we're cutting down trees in order to build bigger and bigger houses, and because we're paving over nature instead of allowing it to just be. And a lot of that has to do with consumption activity. And what we find in our research is that the more materialistic people are, the less they care about the environment, and the more they act in environmentally damaging ways. So in one study we just did with kids, we found that the more materialistic kids were, the less likely they were to turn off lights in rooms where nobody was sitting, the less likely they were to walk or bike. So they were thinking and caring less about the environment.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on materialistic kids.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Professor Tim Kasser about children and materialistic values.
In your book, The High Price of Materialism, we learned a wonderful new word, affluenza. Would you explain this phenomenon, and what does it mean for today's children?
Well, affluenza, I think, is a wonderful word. It's not my word, actually. It's the word of a guy named John DeGraff, who made some movies called Affluenza, and also wrote a book called that. It's a mix of the idea of affluence, being wealthy, and influenza, which is being sick, right? And it's the sickness brought on by wealth. We take on this thing that we think is going to make us happy, wealth, because society keeps telling us over and over and over again that being happy comes from having stuff. But ultimately, it ends up being something that makes us sick. And I think that's what the research is showing over and over again.
How did this happen?
Just to give you an idea of what's happened in the United States in terms of advertising to kids. In 1983, advertisers spent about $100 million a year on advertising to children. In 2005, it was $16.8 billion. Okay, so from $100 million to $16.8 billion. Now, that's an enormous increase. furthermore, it's become much more sophisticated. So what has happened is that you have a whole slew of people with PhDs in anthropology and psychology and sociology who are studying basically how to make kids care about products, how to make kids think that their lives will be better if they go to McDonald's or if they have a pair of Nike shoes or if they have a Bratz doll or whatever it is. And they go into kids' homes and they study them. They study them on the internet. They do studies where the kids don't even know they're in studies by paying attention to how they behave on the schoolyard and other kinds of things. We really have a massive ratcheting up on the part of advertisers and companies who sell products to kids to try to target children. And it's not just the case that all that money is going to TV advertising. We have lots of different kinds of advertisements now. So, for example, there's Channel One, the company which goes to usually relatively poor school districts, and it says, we'll give you a bunch of free TVs if you'll show our TV show. Now, this TV show is a news show, and it does have some news on it, but it also has advertisements aimed at kids. So essentially what Channel One is doing is using the laws that say kids have to go to school and knowing that then they have a captive audience. There's a company called Bus Radio that is trying to put radio onto school buses in order to send commercial messages. We have Coca-Cola and Pepsi machines in schools. We actually have corporate-sponsored curricula now as well, where corporations will develop curricula to teach math counting skills to young children using their brand of candy or whatever it is. So there's an advertisement in the homework that the child is doing. You have corporations who are coming in and sponsoring all these school events, right? Well, they're getting back name recognition. So we have the infiltration of the schools going on. We also have the infiltration via the internet. A great deal of the sites that children visit on the internet are mostly due to corporations setting up some sort of immersive game where children can go and play. But while they're playing, they're exposed to all kinds of different brands. That's part of the game. Or they're exposed to characters who ultimately are brands themselves. There's also stealth marketing. People don't know they're being advertised to. So, for example, there are kids who go to some chat room and they're chatting about basketball, let's say, and all of a sudden somebody else chats about, oh, since I bought such and such brand of sneakers, I have been playing a lot better. Well, that person has been paid by that company in order to come on to that site and do that. There are people who are paid to go to parties and bring certain kinds of products to parties and say, oh, well, this is my favorite kind of sausage. To me, the most sneaky and devious version of stealth marketing is something called the Girls Intelligence Agency. They recruit girls to be agents. And what they are encouraged to do is to have sleepover parties. And before the sleepover party, the Girls Intelligence Agency ships the agent a box of products to kind of show at the sleepover, but to show without the kids who are coming to the sleepover knowing that that's the purpose of the party. And then the agent is told that she shouldn't let the kids know what's going on. And after the party, she reports back to the Girls Intelligence Agency and says, this is what my friends thought of this product or that product.
Doesn't this sound like the old Soviet Union?
Well, you know,
people telling on other people and trying to sort of sneakily make people's opinions change and all this?
It's still bringing people and kids to believe that the way to have a good life is to buy stuff. And that's materialism, and that's consumerism, and that's affluenza. So it is definitely a form of propaganda. It's the best funded, best researched propaganda campaign ever conducted on the human species.
We had a guest on our show one time who told us about the cool kids in schools being paid by, say, shoe manufacturers or jacket manufacturers to wear the shoes they were supplied with to set an example for the rest of the kids.
Absolutely, that happens. Another thing that marketers do is they'll find the coolest kid and they'll give the coolest kid 10 of their new product to distribute to their cool friends. So then you've started a new fad that way as well. It's called viral marketing, okay? You start,
you
know.
What a wonderful word.
It is, but I mean, exactly, but that's the idea is you spread it like a virus and pretty soon you've got a fad and you've sold how many million Tickle Me Elmos or new jackets or video games.
Now that all of us as parents have high blood pressure, now you need to tell us what we can do.
Sure. I think one of the things that really is amazing to me is how little parents really know about what's going on with their children and what marketers actually are doing with regard to their children. And it gets really scary, especially when we talk about some of the things that have happened on a governmental level as well, which I'll talk about in a second. But it is shocking, I think, when you recognize that marketers view your child that you love as somebody who has money, somebody who should be manipulated in order to get that money away from them, or someone who should be manipulated in order to get you to make a purchase. Let me tell you about one other really scary thing that is out there. There was a study once done on nagging. And so what they did was they had the parents keep track of all of the times that the kid said, I want this, I want this, I want this. What did the kid want? And then how many times did the kid nag before they gave in? What kinds of nagging were most effective? Now, it's important to note that this study was done not in order to help parents cope with nagging, but in order to figure out what most effective nagging was and when nagging was most effective and for what kinds of products was nagging most effective, and thus developed a way of thinking about how to help kids know to nag effectively. And if you watch commercials, it's very interesting to watch how children treat their parents and how children talk to their parents. And a lot of that is very intentional modeling on the part of advertisers who are trying to teach kids this is the way to get what you want.
So how did parents participate in a study to help children undermine what they wanted to do?
Well, I don't know for sure that the parents understood what the purpose of the project was, because I, as a scientist, whenever I do a research project, I have to receive ethical approval from my college. Marketers have no such ethical guidelines that they must follow. They don't have to follow ethics. I do. I want to talk about things that parents can do just sort of on their own, and then also things that we need to do more at a national level. To me, there are two main strategies for solutions. The first is to block the likelihood that the kid is being exposed to the materialistic messages. So just like you try not to have your kid get sick, you keep them away from sick kids, you try to block the extent to which kids are exposed to those messages. So this means things like limiting television and limiting internet time. So for example, my kids have grown up having a half an hour maximum of non-commercial television a day. When we're in a hotel, we let them watch more, but when the ads come on, we hit the mute button and we make up our own dialogue for the ads, you know.
That's fun.
It's a lot of fun. And you can really make up some appropriately stupid dialogue a lot of the time.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on materialistic kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Professor Tim Kasser about children and materialistic values.
When I taught school way back in the dark ages, I had middle school kids, and I remember doing a unit on advertising and talking to the kids about what is going on here, what's really being sold, and so forth and so on. And so the critical factor that the kids can bring to bear when they get a little bit older might be a help.
Here. I've been doing this since my kids have been two. Since they've been able to understand what an ad is, I've said, that's an ad. And the purpose of that ad is to get your money. educating our children what advertisements are about is really important. Another thing I think has to do with the ads in the schools. As parents, we have some rights about what our kids are exposed to when we aren't there with them. If I put my kid on the school bus and he listens to bus radio and then he gets there and he has to watch Channel 1 and he sees corporate-sponsored curricula, it's out of my hands at that point. So another thing we can do as parents is to work with our school systems to remove those kinds of messages.
We need to know what's going on in our children's schools.
Parents also have to look at themselves and their own behavior and what they're modeling. So if both parents are working 50 hours a week so they can live in a 4,000-square-foot McMansion and have two brand-new cars and have a big-screen plasma television and rarely have time to get to their kid's soccer game or to do anything but go shopping with the kid, it's pretty clear what kind of messages the child is being exposed to. I think another thing we have to look at is national regulation. So right now, advertising to kids is self-regulated by the industry. There is essentially no governmental oversight of it. And I want to tell you an important story because in the 1970s, the Federal Trade Commission came to Congress and they said, we think marketing to kids is manipulative and we think that kids under 8 should not have advertising aimed at them. And the food industry, the toy industry, the advertising industry all lobbied Congress. And they, first off, convinced Congress to not listen to the FTC's recommendation. And then they got Congress to take away the FTC's power to ever make such a recommendation again.
Oh, my.
And that's why right now we have industry self-regulation. Parents could change that. Parents could write to their senator and say, we want to renew governmental oversight of advertising to kids, or we want to ban advertising to kids. There are countries that already have banned advertising to children.
How can we build into our families' lifestyles an outlook that's basically anti-materialistic when we are working for a better car or a nicer house?
We might be working really hard so we can move to a better neighborhood.
So our kids can go to a better school. What we have to do is to model the values that oppose materialistic values. What's important is to be who you are, to love your family, to be involved in your community. Our research shows that those are the key values which act as an antidote to affluenza. Kids are able to see hypocrisy in their parents.
I guess holidays and birthdays and things like that are times when we're really up against a real problem with that.
I think that's right. I think that the holidays in particular are really scary, and birthdays as well. Birthdays have really evolved into these bashes. And Christmas, I think, is another horrible example of what's happened. Christmas is celebrating the birth of one of the greatest anti-materialists ever. And it's turned into this feast of Santa Claus and feast of consumption. So I think we have to look really carefully at that and ask, you know, what could we be doing differently? And we have a very different kind of Christmas at our house. We only give our children two gifts, one from Santa and one from us. And we give gifts of coupons, for example. So play with me coupons, or skip your vegetables and still get dessert coupons, or special day to go play with just me. I take a day off of work and we go do whatever they want to do. In many ways, it'd be a lot easier to go buy them a Nintendo. But what this does is to spend time with them and show that I love them. We also try to do donations to charitable causes as gifts.
So if we're raising teenagers and they've lived as consumers for most of their young lives, is all hope lost?
Certainly prevention is easier than change. Okay, so once things have been established, it's very difficult to change it. But I don't think change is impossible. A teenager is not going to change on his own. It needs to be a family change. So what becomes important, again, is finding a way to help that teenager build up those values that are an antidote to consumerism, and giving the teenager the opportunity, both alone and with the family, to go out and enact those values. Helping the teenager to find a peer group which doesn't reinforce the materialistic values but supports those other healthier values is also, I think, a parent's obligation.
Which sounds almost like
a faith community, a scouting group, social service kinds of groups would be good things to sort of point our children toward.
Sports groups, I think, can do that as well. Art groups and music groups and dance groups. It's going to depend on what the kid's interested in. That's very important. Parents need help.
If you could leave parents with one nugget now that we're all strung out and frazzled, what would it be?
My nugget would be, parents need to change, but parents can't change alone. They're up against a multi-billion dollar industry trying everything it can to get your kid to buy stuff and to brand your kid. And so we need to insist upon broader social change. And politicians are going to listen to a whole bunch of parents if we band together and we show that we really care about our kids and we're worried that the way that society is set up is not in our kids' best interests. So I think parents need to recognize they can't do it alone. They need to get together with other parents.
Professor Kasser, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
There are three excellent organizations that I would refer your listeners to. The first is a group called the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. The leaders of this movement at a national level, commercialfreechildhood.org. The Center for a New American Dream is another excellent place with lots and lots of resources. Go to newdream.org. Another organization is called Share, Save, Spend. It's sharesavespend, either .org or .com. There's three books that I would really recommend as well. One is Madeline Levine's book, Price of Privilege, which is really about the problems that rich kids face in consumer culture. And then two other books that are about what really is happening with marketing to kids, one by Juliet Shore named Born to Buy, and another one by Susan Lynn called Consuming Kids. In case you're interested in more information about my work, you can visit my website at http://faculty.knox, that's K-N-O-X, .edu/TKASSER.
Well, you have given us lots to look into. And of course, all of the parents out there, we're all rolling up our sleeves and thinking, okay, let's go, guys. So thank you very, very much, Professor Tim Kasser, for being with us today.
Thanks. It's been a real pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Professor Kasser's books, The High Price of Materialism, or Psychology and Consumer Culture. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573, and please spell anything that's not obvious. Mention show number 349 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.